We are in the Tunnel Club and at FC Cincinnati TQL Stadium, and I'm here with President and Co-CEO Jeff Berning. Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here, Aaron. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really great to have you. I have to say and start out with, anyone that knows me in Cincinnati knows that this experience right here, the Tunnel Club, is my favorite thing in the world, and FC soccer. So, frankly, kudos to you. I mean, wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, very blessed.
So I want to talk about, Jeff, your background to me is very impressive. And it sounds like, can we tell the story, you know, starting out with kind of this political background, frankly, and leading up to here at FC. Can you kind of walk me through where you got your start?
Sure. I grew up as a kid in Westwood, went to St. Catherine's Church in Westwood, a large family, lots of kids.
Yeah.
I had coaches and teachers at St. Catherine's. I played sports year-round. That encouraged me to go to St. X High School. They saw something in me that I certainly wouldn't have seen in myself. And St. X, the Jesuits sort of took over, and
right.
The men for others ethos that is so foundational to a lot of the young men at St. X really took hold of me. I was not a leader. I played sports. I did reasonably well in school, and I tried to be friendly literally with everyone that I could. And I was the first Berning to go to college. I went to Miami University.
You were?
Yes.
The first one.
Yes.
That's amazing.
And, you know, again, it's just those, I look back, those grade school teachers that sent me to X, and then there was no question at that point I was going to go to college. So
right.
I paid my own way through Miami University. I was an RA, a resident assistant, my sophomore year. And that was really where I would say my leadership started to come out a little bit. I ran for student government in the student body elections and was elected a couple times. Mm-hmm. And really, that set me on my path. I studied international studies. I spent 2 years African studies, 2 years Soviet studies.
Wow.
Spoke Russian language.
You did?
Studied in Moscow in the summer of 1988. And really thought I was going to be a diplomat. I thought I'd be in the Foreign Service. I was thinking I was going to take the Foreign Service exam. And but I also got involved in politics a little bit. I worked for U.S. Senator John Glenn as a state political director.
I saw that. I love John Glenn.
Yes, he was a true American hero.
He really was.
And anyway, I had worked for David Mann when he was our local congressperson. And ultimately, I was the bridge into sports was I was asked to run the campaign to keep the Reds and Bengals in town.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a formative vote. And I did that for 5 months. 62% voted yes to keep the Reds and Bengals.
How was running that, by the way? What was that experience like? Because I could imagine that.
Well, I was 28 years old,
yeah.
So it was very intense.
I'm sure.
But I want to offer something similar to FC Cincinnati in a much shorter period of time, because it was really only about a 5 month campaign. I had a very clear vision of what it was going to take, what the campaign needed to be to secure voter approval of the campaign. And we did quite well. And then Mike Brown hired me to be a top business executive at the Bengals afterwards. I was thinking I was going to go to law school, but instead I got my MBA from Xavier at night while I was at the Bengals. And then I was involved at the United Way for 10 years volunteer, 10-year volunteer at the Chamber of Commerce. I had helped lead the effort to change the form of government in Cincinnati. So we have a directly elected mayor with some power to actually lead.
Wow.
And as a result of all of those efforts, there were people in the business community that asked me to consider running for city council. And Mike Brown, right. To his credit, said, look, go make the city better. That's good for P&G. It's good for Kroger. It's good for all the people that live here. And yeah, it's good for the Bengals if the city's doing better.
Absolutely.
So I kept my full-time job at the Bengals, but also Was elected three times to what is a part-time job.
Right. Was it really a part-time job?
It was for me. Yeah. I always say I was on the losing side of a lot of 5-4 votes. And it wasn't Republican, Democrat, or liberal conservative. It was the full-time politicians against the part-time politicians.
Sure.
Because we were probably more impatient. We wanted to change things. We were willing to cast tough votes for reform.
Right.
And to make those long-term changes that would make Cincinnati more competitive and ultimately healthier. Well, after 6 years, I decided to get out of City Hall politics. And my two of my three children were big-time soccer players, and I had coached them in Say Soccer for their school teams.
I love that. Can you tell me about that a little bit, the coaching aspect?
Sure. You know, I recommend to all parents, if you have a chance to volunteer and coach your kids, it's so much fun and so rewarding. It's not about winning or losing, but just to see kids try and succeed, and the joy that comes from succeeding, and kids learning how to suffer loss, because we have loss in the world. There's adversity in our lives. And to know that you have a whole team around you, that you don't suffer alone. When the team loses, everyone's, you know, hugging and everyone's holding hands, and it's just such a great lesson that you don't have to completely internalize it and suffer by yourself, that you have the team. And so it also is a great way to get to see your kids with their friends.
Yes.
Because so frequently the kids are at school with their friends or at the playground with their friends.
Right.
But this is to get them to interact with one another. So I loved it.
I'm going to chime in there and say that I actually coached the past two seasons of my daughter's assistant coach, my daughter's soccer team. And this is like 8 and under for St. Michael's School in Sharonville. And it was such a joy. To see all of their personalities, to see where their strengths were, you know, and it was just a fun experience. And so I think I'll continue coaching. Now, I can strongly say that soccer is not her gift, really fun to see the other girls blossom. And I would bring my son with me, and he'd be playing on the side with the soccer ball, and he was great, actually, to watch at 4 years
old.
Yes,
we had a boy on the team 1 year with my son's team who was not physically gifted. He was challenged, and he just, more than anything, wanted to score a goal, and we worked all year to help him. My son was very good, and my son was going to come down the one side and draw the defense, and he was going to pass the ball to the back post. And the whole thing was to get Charlie to be able to run in stride. And all he had to do was literally just redirect the ball into the goal. And we practiced and practiced and practiced. And one game, it happens just the way we practice. The ball comes across. Charlie redirects it into the goal. And he ran up the field celebrating like he had just won the Olympic gold medal. And to this day, that memory of Charlie, just the joy, the glee of Charlie with his arms raised, outstretched, celebrating that Charlie had scored a goal. I mean, there's just nothing better.
When that happens for those kids on the team, you do tear up. I mean, I had that happen. It was like, oh my goodness. And they're so just overcome with joy for the sport. And you think, that was a lucky shot, but, you know, wow, did that make a difference in a kid's life? So
when I left city council, I joined the board of my kids' youth soccer club. They played for Hammer, and once I was on the board, this is in 2012, 2013, I led the merger with Kings in Northern Kentucky, so the club became Kings Hammer. I was the president of the board for, I want to say, 3 or 4 years, it seems like. And during that time, I was noticing the growth of soccer in our country. Mm. And we were going to these tournaments, and you know, there was, it seemed like, thousands of kids and their parents, and you would stay 45 minutes away in a hotel because all the hotels were booked. Municipalities were investing in these huge sports complexes, whether that be in Indiana or in Kentucky nearby. And so I started to look at the NFL data. The NFL, of course, gives data to all the teams that says the NFL is the 800-pound gorilla at the top of the totem pole.
Sure.
But I was interested in, where's soccer? And so what I found is between 2004 and 2014, soccer had gone from 2004, not one of the top 10 sports in America, to by 2014, fourth.
Wow.
And among people under the age of 45, third.
Yeah.
Obviously, the NFL is number one.
Sure.
Basketball's number two. But there was soccer, ahead of baseball, and ahead of hockey. So Then I started looking at Nielsen ratings in Cincinnati. Because I was a president of a club, I had data on how many kids were playing in Cincinnati.
Yeah, those are good benchmarks.
And I could compare it to where was soccer in St. Louis, in Kansas City, which had an MLS team, which has the NFL, which has Major League Baseball. And there was it struck me that all the data supported that this was growing dramatically, and there was no reason it wouldn't work in Cincinnati. And I always say I can remember my first love. My first love was the Big Red Machine. I loved the Cincinnati Reds.
Yes.
Pete Rose and Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan. And anyway, and my love of Cincinnati is rooted, it really is a kid, my love of the Cincinnati Reds. My kids love Manchester United.
Do they really?
Well, that was their team.
Goodness.
There was no team in Cincinnati. And so I set about changing that, and I wrote a business plan to bring professional soccer to Cincinnati.
Wow.
And I was convinced that I was ahead of the curve, that I was ahead of what other people were realizing. And the whole strategy was to make MLS, we would start at the minor league level, but make MLS take us an expansion before Charlotte, Nashville, Vegas, Tampa, San Diego. Like, Cincinnati was going to knock this thing off the charts. We were going to surpass major league teams in the minor leagues, and MLS was going to take us before these other cities figured it out.
Right.
The trick was, where was the team going to play? And the Bengals didn't have any interest, and the Reds didn't have any interest. So I went up to the University of Cincinnati. Santa Ono, the president then, was great. Mm-hmm. Mike Bone and I started talking and working out what it would look like to play in Nippert. They had just done a $90 million renovation, so they had this beautiful, historic stadium.
Definitely.
And so in January of 15, I got a call from Carl Lindner saying, I understand you're trying to bring professional soccer to Cincinnati. I said, yes. He said, my family and I are really interested in soccer. We've been following the growth for some time. Would you be willing to let me be your owner?
Yeah.
And I said, well, you were on the list. I don't have a place to play yet. And he said, well, you may not know this, but I'm on the board of trustees at UC, and last night they approved your plan. So you're going to have an opportunity to play at
UC.
So my question is, can we partner and maybe we do this together? And I said, well, listen, I certainly was going to call you once I had the place to play. He said, we should have lunch. I said, sure, when? He said, how about today? So I went over and had lunch with Carl Lindner, and I walked him through the plan, and we shook hands, and we agreed, let's do this together. And that was the start.
Honestly, I'm thinking in your brain, right? You looked at all the ratings, you did your homework, and then I guess my question is, with the starting of this idea, the seed, how did you, you know, execute on that vision? I mean, this is a pretty immense vision that you had, and I think you could see where it was going. And how did you make sure, I think, as a CEO, as a leader, that this would come to fruition?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There really was a clarity of vision. I knew, I was fully confident that Cincinnati was ready for something different. Of course, the Reds, we are so blessed. I'm a Reds season ticket holder.
Yeah.
Had been there since the opening of the stadium, obviously childhood fan. I was blessed to work at the Bengals for almost 20 years. I'm a huge Bengals season ticket holder, love the Bengals. But I could tell that this community was ready for something new and something different. If we ran the team consistent with our values, we want to be a winning team, we want to be a family-friendly, inclusive club, a great environment for people to come with their kids, and we'd be a franchise that is visibly committed to making this community better, to having great impact. Mm-hmm. That I always say, I run this club like I'm the mayor of Cincinnati. If it's good for Cincinnati, we'll find a way to make it good for FC Cincinnati.
Sure.
And if it's good for FC Cincinnati, it should be aligned with the long-term interests of our city.
Right.
And I just felt that if we could execute there, of course, Carl and all of our partners, Scott Farmer, George Joseph, many others, gave us the means, the funding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've raised over $600 million at this point.
Wow.
We're almost a $1 billion enterprise. So we've had the funding.
Sure.
We've had good people around us. There was started with, I was still at the Bengals. I gave 8 weeks. So we were doing this at night around my kitchen table. There were six of us around my kitchen table.
It was your kitchen table group.
It was.
Right? I mean, that's how things get started.
We still have the kitchen table in the basement at our downtown office because it'll be in the museum someday.
Yes, it will.
But Jeff Smith still works with us. Dan McNally, Tommy G, Tommy Glurter, our broadcaster. But that is how it started. And what I would say is we've had a commitment from me modeling this to constantly evolving, to constantly growing, to constantly innovating, to never being satisfied. So we joined the USL, the minor leagues.
Right.
And we quickly became the New York Yankees of minor league soccer. But we weren't satisfied. We wanted to get into the major leagues. We wanted to be Cincinnati's third major league team. So we, of course, built to that, got the expansion bid. Well, then they said you have to play next year, and you have to build the stadium downtown. We didn't have the site. We didn't have any of the ingredients.
Sure.
But they gave us 4 months, so we set about to win over the West End, constantly listening and, again, evolving, strengthening our community commitment.
What was the approval process like, by the way, for that? Because I know it's not easy from a development perspective to get things, you know, to come to life, right? You need community buy-in. Was there a community buy-in factor?
Sure. I mean, and enormously critical. I went door-to-door.
Did you?
I went door-to-door right out here in the West End.
Your experience from the past.
Yes. I literally knocked on doors. I had some people from the West End with me who might know the people and introduced. Some of them recognized me from a lot of the news coverage.
Right.
I wanted to listen. And what we learned, and I went to lots of community hearings, some of which were quite loud at times.
Yes. As they usually are, frankly.
But what I told our group, our FC Cincinnati group, is there's two groups of voices. And we're going to listen and react to one, and we're going to largely ignore the other. The one group was people who didn't live in the West End who were ideologically opposed to what we were setting out to do.
Right.
They thought it was just horrible. We could never convert them.
Right. They didn't have the growth mindset. It takes a growth mindset.
Correct. And they didn't live in the West End.
Yes.
The people in the West End.
Sure.
Had a very different point of view. Their perspective was, change has been bad for the West End. You are promising enormous change. How can we trust that this will be good change?
Mm-hmm.
That was very fair. That was where they were. I always say, sometimes as a leader, you got to go to where people are.
Yes, you do.
And where they were is to be distrustful of change and skeptical of old promises.
And I think most people are, right? Most people are.
So we signed a community benefits agreement.
Yeah.
So David Mann, who was the vice mayor of Corside, used to work for, he said, Jeff, they don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
I know you to trust you, but they have no reason to trust you. So we're going to put it in a legally binding commitment. You're going to do it anyway. You don't need the legally binding commitment. And he was right. And so we did that, which gave real legitimacy to the partnership.
Mm-hmm.
With our neighbors. We've exceeded all of the commitments by a lot, to the point that now we're obviously looking to develop just north of the stadium.
I know.
And we
what
had
does that survey
unanimous
say?
Approval. Unanimous approval.
Wow.
From the West End Community Council. When you come to our games here, a lot of the people, the majority of the people that work here on game day are from the West End. And we said, it's a little extra money to buy, you know, the gym shoes for one of the kids or grandkids or, you know, a little, you know, special night out or whatever. It's just a little extra money. To be clear, these are part-time jobs, so we're not saying that, you know, these are necessarily life-altering. But the pride that people feel working here is so evident. People will say hi, and, you know, sometimes I get stopped at little stories. And it's just awesome. It is wonderful.
It is awesome. I have to say that, okay, so for kids' soccer teams, right, since I did coach the kids, and I don't know how you have this set up, but they're able to purchase tickets like in groups for soccer teams, which is so neat. So the girls were able to sign
family
up
friendly.
For, yes, so family friendly. And it's funny, one day I was at a game and I have friends that own a house on the corner by Washington Park, and we throw beads to the kids, right? Like blue beads, orange beads, and it's all these kids. And I think that made my day. And then I saw like three moms that I knew as we're throwing these beads in their kids, and it's just such a great atmosphere for children. And it's not super long and drawn out.
No, it's 2 hours. It's quick. The games mostly start at 7:30 on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. We say you're out of here by 9:30.
You are.
You could have the kids home and in bed by a little after 10 o'clock.
Yes.
Or if you're a young group of friends, you're going out for a nightcap, or you're going out for a late dinner after our games.
Right.
We don't have, I was the guy at the Bengals that took calls on Mondays from people complaining about fighting or vulgar language.
We do not have that here.
Yes. And that was a key part of our values, that this is going to be an environment that families can feel really comfortable and safe in terms of bringing their kids and having a very warm, inviting environment. Mm-hmm. That
All of the parents I know, and frankly, I know plenty that are seasoned ticket holders with their small children. They love it. They are such huge fans. And, the times where the soccer team gets to come on the field for some of these kids. I mean, all of that is just so exciting. And I think it just builds momentum. So, Jeff, where did Gary the mascot idea come from?
So it's very funny. I saw that we just celebrated, I think, the 5th anniversary of Gary the mascot.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally laughed when I saw it on social media because of how it came about. We talked about the foundation, and the woman who runs our foundation does a phenomenal job, mm-hmm. Kate Solomon, thought it would be helpful to have a mascot because kids love these mascots.
They do.
And Kate had worked for me at the Bengals. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they have Houday. And so she asked if I was okay with a mascot. Mm-hmm. And it would be, of course, a lion. Because in our logo, dating back to when we were in the minor leagues, we had the lion logo. So anyway, so in soccer, there's not frequently mascots.
Okay.
This is somewhat unique. And so I was like, do I really want to have a mascot? But I thought about the kids, and I thought about Houday at the Bengals, and said to Kate, yeah, fine. So they worked with an artist, and they came up with, and they presented to me the drawing. And so I said, sure. So we had a press conference announcing Gary the Lion, and Gary the Lion, and at the time, it was just the Lion. It was not Gary. Comes out, and I see for the first time, and I'm sort of startled by it. But so, okay, we're announcing it. Well, when we had the picture for social media of Gary, the way that the tail was depicted, some of our fans on social media, passionate fans, said that they thought that the tail created a G, and then I think it was the way the legs were, maybe was an A, and then the upper body was the R, and then the arms were the Y. And you could sort of see, with creative lens, Gary.
Yes.
And I'm just offering, people thought that was our intention. It was not. But there were creative people who had this vision, Gary.
Yes.
Gary the Lion. And so it has taken hold. Now we all refer to our mascot as Gary. The thing I think is quite interesting is, in Major League Soccer, some of the national writers refer to us as the Garys.
Really?
And our academy team as the Young Garys, which I think is really special because
I do too.
That seriously, it just organically arose from our fans.
So I've noticed there was a soccer field that was built next to this
in Middletown.
Yes, in Middletown. And then also in Mason by Mackinac Park. That's right by my 4-year-old's daycare. And so it is packed. Those fields are packed. Kids are playing. Can you tell me about that?
Sure.
Like, what's the plan there?
So we have our FC Cincinnati Foundation.
Yes.
It's the largest foundation in Major League Soccer among all the teams.
I did not know that.
We have wonderful owners. When Marvin Lewis left the Bengals, the Bengals did not bring in-house the Marvin Lewis Community Fund.
They did not.
He had spent 16 years at the Bengals and had this wonderful community fund that was enormously impactful. And I felt that was Marvin's ultimate, his biggest legacy. So we brought the Marvin Lewis Fund in-house into our foundation. We hired his executive director, Natalie. So we do fundraising activities, Serve by the Pros, and Ladies Lace Up, which is like the NFL 101 that he did. But we do these programs in order for us to make these big community investments. And one of them is we've done now 10 mini pitches, 1 year ahead of schedule. We're now on to our second 10. These mini pitches are to give kids a safe place to play in neighborhoods where there may not be a lot of parks. There may not be a lot of fields. So it's in the rest of the world, sometimes soccer is played in alleyways and in dirt areas, not these lush fields that we see here in America.
They're so blessed. Really pristine fields, by the way, that you're building. It's so cool.
We've done these. Last year, we impacted over 30,000 kids through our foundation. We have a honor roll program. Again, this was from Marvin, called Learning is Cool. We kept Learning is Cool. If you make the A honor roll with Marvin, you got to meet Bengals players. Now you make the honor roll. There's an evening at the zoo where you meet all the FC Cincinnati players.
Oh, wow.
You bring your parents. You can bring your siblings. You get your picture taken with one of our players.
So exciting for these kids.
You get autographs. It is, and it makes it. Like the whole point, learning is cool. You get to brag to your friends, hey, because I'm on the A honor roll, I got to do this.
Yes.
And maybe that rewards them, but also inspires some of their classmates. Oh, okay. Boy, I'd like to do that. So maybe I need to, you know, work a little bit harder in school. We have a great partnership with Cincinnati Public, but as well as other public schools in the region. And, you know, we're just going to keep growing it.
I think that's a really good thing. So I'm thinking about having eight games. You had eight games when you were with the Bengals, right? Home games. And now, with MLS, it's about double. What was that transition like?
Well, it's a lot, because I will say that I am of the belief that this is an honor to be in this industry. Mm-hmm. It's hard work, but it's a lot of fun. And so I want all of our people to go to all of the games. I can't imagine ever missing a home game.
No, I love it.
I travel with the team to almost every away game, and our games go from February to December. Mm-hmm. We had about a five-week off season this year because our season last year was so successful. So it is long. I've evolved a little bit, so now there's some scenarios where if an employee needs to miss a game, you can miss a game.
Right.
So it really is about 20 home games.
Okay.
Last year, I think it was closer to 25 with our success.
Oh, yes. With all of that, the season was extended.
Correct. Which is a good thing. That's what you want.
That was great.
So anyway, there's no question it's longer. You know, the NFL offseason's about 5 months, really. You think about it sort of from the end of January until July, the end of July. So it is longer, but on the other hand, it's not as long in some ways if you think about the Reds, where my friends at the Reds, you know, they're playing 5-6 nights
a
week.
Right.
So, you know, to a certain degree, we have one, sometimes two games a week, and that's not that much.
From a CEO standpoint, just hearing your story, all I can hear is grit and resilience, right? So I guess my question to you is, what do you think you can attribute this grit and resilience to from your, you know, your whole background?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I to some degree, we're just wired, I think, certain ways. You know, I came from a family growing up where there were 10 kids. Mm-hmm. When you went to sports practice, when you came home, I'm just being honest, sometimes, you know, dinner was gone. All the kids had eaten all the dinner.
Sure,
so you had a bowl of cereal, or you had, you know, Campbell's soup. Like, that was dinner.
Right.
And so, you know, to a certain degree, there was something in me that was about working hard, about grit, about resilience. I was always ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
I was always ambitious. I don't know where that comes from.
I can see that. I can see that.
One of our values in our culture, our DNA code, is vision equals ambition. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't. We moved into MLS, yes, and then I wanted to be, you know, a solid MLS, and then I wanted to be a great MLS. Then we were trophy. Now we're trophy MLS, but now we're building this enterprise where we are interested in soccer in other ways,
mm-hmm,
whether that be significantly growing youth soccer in this area. Maybe there's women's soccer, mm-hmm, soccer in other parts of the world,
sure,
maybe other sports. starting new companies within FC Cincinnati because we want to grow revenue, because more revenue means we can afford better players, because we want to win trophies. We want to win MLS Cup.
Right.
You win MLS Cup with good players. Good players cost more than the not as good players.
They do, yes.
So this constant ambition and drive, I would just say it's been in me forever, but I didn't necessarily know how to act on it, what to make of it.
Or...
I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I was not the star athlete. I was a good, try-hard athlete. There was a player from the LA Lakers teams, Kurt Rambis. He had the horn-rimmed glasses. Like, that was me, the try-hard, work hard.
Yes.
Maybe I fouled out, but
Rudiger.
I earned all five fouls. And so, you know, I had sharp elbows.
Yes.
You know, I was competitive. Maybe not the most talented, but I did work hard. I got good grades, so there's clearly some level of ability there. And it really just, at St. X, it started to really take hold and manifest itself.
School.
And then at Miami University, again, is where my leadership wing sort of grew.
Right.
To enable this.
You had to write people up as an RA, right?
Yes.
Keep them in line.
Yeah. I always said, you can break the rules.
That's right.
As I did.
Yes.
But if you see me breaking the rules, know that I will write you up.
That's exactly
I'm not going
right.
to look the other way. I have integrity.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a fair question. And I'm not sure, but I think this is a blessing. It's also somewhat of a curse.
Because you keep going.
I'm never satisfied.
You're never satisfied. You keep going. And I think that's a really great mentality. Like, it's this growth mindset that I see.
I challenge people with a fixed mindset.
Yes.
Like, that just doesn't fit in
it
FC
doesn't.
Cincinnati.
No, it doesn't.
And I either have to coach that up or we move them out because we need people that are constantly interested in growth. I always say, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
That's
Get in the
right.
room with the smarter people. You can learn things.
Yes, you grow.
And be challenged. And I want an environment where I'm challenged. My people feel comfortable challenging me. That they see better ways. They see innovation. They're reading on their own. They're talking to their colleagues in other sports.
Right.
We always have to be growing. And for me, that bleeds into our city, where I do have some level of influence of what's going on in the city. And I'm going to constantly challenge our stakeholders, whether they be civic or government, to say, what are we doing or we're not doing enough to grow?
Yes.
And this city, Cincinnati, in 1950, was the 18th largest city in the country. We're now 30th, 75 years later. In another 75 years, okay, in 2100, are we going to be the 50th?
Right.
The 75th? All these other cities are passing us by. What are we doing to stop that? What are we doing to grow?
Sure.
In less than 10 years, Nashville doubled their skyline. And we have a lot of people around Cincinnati who are quite content, who think
right.
we're doing just fine.
Right.
No, we're not.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point, we rely on, we have P&G and Kroger and Fifth Third Bank and all these wonderful companies, American Financial, that really provide the employment.
They do.
Want to help someone? Help them get a job. Jobs.
Right.
And those jobs help them support their families, and it provides
Definitely.
The tax base that we support the city for safety net, for infrastructure, and everything else that does make this a great city.
100%.
But we need to keep growing because other cities are led by leaders, both on the public and civic side, who are committed to growth, who
yes,
do have
growth
a growth plan, and they
right.
are executing that plan. And
right.
sometimes I'm concerned that we're not...
The strategy.
We're just not doing what we need to be doing here.
I completely hear you. And I applaud you for your growth mindset. I do want to ask you, in the morning, you wake up, what's the morning look like for Jeff Birding?
Well, I'm pretty quickly going down. We have a gym in our house,
yeah.
A small gym, and I get on a Peloton tread, and my wife would want me to make sure that I do some stretching.
Yeah.
But
we'll add stretching in there.
But I pretty much get on the treadmill every single morning. I'm training for the Flying Pig again this
year.
Are
you? I'm doing it this year. Do you do the half or the full?
The full.
You do?
I've done the full seven times.
Seven times.
And I'll do the full again.
You're putting me to, by the way, I was a college runner, so you're putting me to shame.
Well, you're running the half. I'm completing
I'm
the
running
full.
The half, yeah.
I'm completing
yeah.
the full, but I love it. And I love the discipline.
Yes.
I love the mental fortitude because your body's screaming to stop.
It doesn't want
you
to
train
going.
For 20 and will your way through the final six.
Yes.
And I love the mental battle that's just me against my in my own mind, against my body.
I can't believe that you train on a treadmill, though. Do you get outside? Because I can't imagine 20 miles.
I did 18 miles on Saturday
Are
on
you
the treadmill.
Me?
I'll do 20 this
That's
Saturday.
That's my torture. That's my torture. I think if you can do 18, 20 miles on a treadmill, you're just a winner. Because
well, someone would say crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those. But okay.
But that's
so
how
you,
I start my day.
Okay.
I have to get...
Yes.
And again, I want to be clear. I'm not sprinting. I'm not, but I have to get moving. It's good
mentally. Yes,
it gets me to prepare for the
100%,
day.
100%.
And then I feel great. So by, you know.
The dopamine hits
yes.
and you're ready to take
so,
on the day.
You know, I try to drink a gallon of water a day and drink a lot of water and then.
So then when you go to your closet, is it all blue suits with orange ties? Is that what it looks like?
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, pretty much. I have a lot of blue
I've
suits.
I've heard the rumors, right,
yeah.
that you're pretty much on brand.
Yeah, I'm a lot of blue suits and a lot of orange ties.
So how did you come like up with that color scheme? I love the color scheme. I was hoping I had orange pants today, but I just have the blue blazer for you.
So I had a friend that was helping me start the club. Gary DeJesus mm-hmm. was my predecessor at King's Hammer, and he had been a Procter & Gamble brand manager, and he knew the psychology of colors.
Yes.
And so blue is a favorite primary color, mm-hmm. and it denotes trust.
That's right.
And confidence.
That's right.
Obviously different shades, right? A little mm-hmm. bit darker is a little bolder, and when you get into the navy blue versus a royal blue,
right,
maybe
blue.
A little prettier.
Yes.
And then orange is a warm color. Yellow and red are considered hot colors, meaning hot emotions.
Okay.
Some people really like red and yellow. Some people really can't stand red or yellow.
Yeah.
But when you combine the two, you blend them to orange, it is a warm color.
It is a
warm
color.
It denotes enthusiasm and energy,
right.
movement. And then we looked at the blue and orange together. We looked at all the sports teams we could find that are blue and orange. Think about the Florida Gators, the Auburn Tigers. Think
about
the Denver Broncos. When you have blue and orange, guess what we found? They sell a lot of merchandise because people like to
wear the psychology of
blue
colors.
And orange. And so then we looked, of course, in Major League Soccer. There mm-hmm. were no teams blue and orange. So it was like, that's
it. What you're doing.
The name FC Cincinnati, I was committed that we were going to promote Cincinnati to the world and bring the world to Cincinnati. When you look at ESPN, you know, sometimes it says Bengals against the Steelers or the Reds mm-hmm. against the Nationals. Mm-hmm. But for us, it has to say Cincinnati because it is just Football Club Cincinnati. That was how we wanted it, that it could never be anything other than promoting our city, which then puts responsibility because we have to be a winning team. Because
yeah, you do.
I'm a big believer that, right, if you're Chicago, New York,
sure.
Miami, LA, you have a brand, of
you
course.
Do. You do.
But when you're a smaller size market, your teams really do help create your image.
The ethos of the city.
So I use this and I say it respectfully, but you know, Cleveland was, people joked, a mistake on the lake, and then LeBron wins the NBA title, and now they're Believeland.
Right.
And they have that extra pride and that civic fortitude that comes with the pride of having a world championship team.
100%.
So I felt like we needed to be a winning team to help change Cincinnati's brand because at the time when we were starting in 2015, 2016, the Bengals were in a little bit of a rut. The mm-hmm. Reds hadn't won a playoff series since 2010, I think it was. We were committed.
How fun was it? Like, was this 2 years ago when we were, is it two seasons ago or last season? We
it was
were all
last
winning.
Season,
last
yes.
season. We were all winning. It was the Reds, the Bengals.
Yes. And, and I was a big believer the whole time I was at the Bengals. When the Reds win, it's good for the Bengals. And when the Bengals win, it's good for the Reds. Because if you're not a big fan of that sport, mm-hmm. just the pride that you feel, and it gets you excited for your team's upcoming season.
Right.
And so that made it easy. We're all for Cincy. So we root for our teams. We root for UC and mm-hmm. Xavier and NKU and all the teams in the region. We root for everyone because it's good for our city.
I like that. So a question we've asked all the CEOs we've had on the What Gives podcast is, if the world is ending, right, and you've got this bug out bag, which they're a hot ticket item on Amazon right now, the bug out bags. And you could bring four things in your bug out bag. What do you think those four things, Jeff, would be?
Well, let me say, if the world was ending, I'd want to die here in Cincinnati.
Good.
So I don't know.
Mark Twain, is that the quote or no?
Exactly. I'd get a little extra time. You know, this is where my family is, and this is where I've, you know, committed my life to make this a better place. So, but I understand the context of the question. I mean, I'd want to have my family with me, my wife, my three kids. Would certainly, I don't know that it'd have to be a big bug out bag, but
yeah,
you know, all of our earthly possessions are, you know, the most important ones are in our mind.
Right.
You know, I always say with FC Cincinnati, we're in the memory business. We're giving people wonderful memories.
You are.
To celebrate together. And I can think of so many of them that, of course, I'd be taking with me. So I don't know that there'd be any tangible thing. It would certainly be the people.
I kind of like that answer, you know, that it wouldn't be any tangible thing. And I think you're right. But I have to say, if in my bug out bag, I think I just want to be at the Tunnel Club here, being served at the bar here,
yes,
you know, experience economy out there. This is my favorite place to be. So,
yeah. Well, so much of this is about legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am not lost on the fact that, you know, 50 years from now, math says I'll be long gone. And, you know, this is something that I helped do with Carl and all of our owners and our staff. You know, we did create this, and it's pretty awesome.
I mean, what an amazing legacy that you've created, and the impacts, I think, with the FC Foundation and these soccer fields and really what you're doing for our overall region, this new development. Is there anything you want to say about that legacy, you know, with your children and then grandchildren down the road, if you don't have any yet?
Not yet. all I would offer is we're not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as I'm blessed to be in a position to influence the future, you know, no one has been willing to tackle that we have an obsolete arena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, world-class cities, first-class cities in this country, and I'm gonna, like, in Fargo, in Bismarck, in Des Moines, they all have modern arenas.
They do.
Where I'm going with the Kansas City has a modern arena. They don't have NBA or NHL. But think of how the spirit that was in this town, right, with when we have the big concerts and
right. Would you want that here, like north of, as part of that development, you think?
No, or? I don't think there's enough room for it. Look, the Chamber of Commerce is currently doing a study. My friend Brendan Call is leading it.
Yes.
I trust Brendan. 3CDC and other people are involved. And at the end of the day, they'll figure out the best place for it to go. And I truly am agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that this city needs a new arena.
Yes.
And that's just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just,
we're going to add that to your legacy list here.
Well, I certainly
there's a lot.
I certainly intend to.
Yeah.
I certainly intend to. You know, to a certain degree, I look back, obviously, where we started this conversation with, I was asked to run the stadium campaign, you know, the voters said they wanted to keep the Reds and Bengals downtown. They want to develop the riverfront. Well, you know, we have a nice riverfront. We have a beautiful riverfront park. We have the two stadiums. I think they're going to be there forever. And, you know, I feel some sense of pride having played my part in the riverfront. Now what we're doing here in the West End, of course, with this stadium's won international awards as the best soccer stadium in the world. And I'd like to see the arena. But, you know, a lot of it is also just the people side. I know we're impacting the lives of kids in this city.
You really are.
Of kids here in the West End. We have Adopt a School with Hayes Porter. We have a partnership with Taft High School, our neighbors.
Something I would like to say, and I know we're probably getting short on time here, is that it's very clear to me that you are a visionary for our region. And I want to thank you for that, because for me, I've always been one that's in that growth mindset that you have to think outside of the box. You have to think differently. And I'm seeing it here executed in front of me. And frankly, I think that is why this is my favorite thing, because it is so different. than anything I've experienced in Cincinnati. So I just want to say
thank you.
Thank you for loving Cincinnati, you know, and thank you for all you do for our overall region.
Well, thank you, Aaron. I've enjoyed talking with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for joining us on the What Gives podcast.
Thanks for being interested in talking to me.
Absolutely.
To learn more about how to expand your philanthropy, please reach out to the Northern Cincinnati Foundation.